On Agenda tonight, Rob Mercer MLC explains why he believes it's time to update the 2014 Council of Ministers strategy for offshore energy production, and Stu Peters MHK tells us why it's not. The Tynwald vote showed Stu to be in a minority of one on this matter, but is the vote reflective of public opinion? Is the science settled yet? Stu doesn't think so. Should we exploit our gas reserves? Rob doesn't think so. Fasten yourself in. It's going to be a bumpy ride. Rob Mercer, a fairly innocuous-looking motion on the order paper. Tynwald supports, effectively, Council of Ministers updating the 2014 strategy for offshore energy production. Why did you feel it necessary to bring that motion forward?
Well, a couple of things, really. Firstly, it was brought to Tynwald in 2014, 7 years ago, and I've heard it referred to a number of times in debate in Keys and in Tynwald. And we've had a number of other strategies come through, and all the more recent ones have had an end date or a review stage built in. And I realised actually that this one had neither of those things. And that was the initial, the curiosity was from, it keeps on getting referred to in debate, what's in it? Went and had a look and realised actually it doesn't have the same standards as the current ones. Actually, you probably know more about it than us two, because I believe you were the person who moved that original strategy through Tynwald.
I mean, it's a fairly innocuous sounding motion. Why would you choose not to support a review into that strategy?
Well, one thing that I've learnt about politics is that the most innocuous looking and sounding things have often got something behind them. And my concern about this was that what Rob and those who think the same way as Rob were trying to do was to just effectively kill this Kroger gas field thing, which we don't know yet whether it's going to work or not. Rob's motion came on the back of the Council of Ministers agreeing a 4 months extension to the exploration licence. Kroger had asked for 18 months, so they'd only been given 4 months, which makes it more difficult for them, I think. I don't know. I don't know the firm particularly well. And it just struck me as being another obstacle in the means of being able to get this potential Manx gas field to be explored and exploited.
And yet, the motion calls for the report to come back to Tynwald, I think it's in July, which is after the 4 months expires on Kroger. So presumably, Council of Ministers will have made a decision. And I'm not sure whether Tynwald also has to engage in that decision, but a decision will have been made before the report comes back to Tynwald in relation to the review on the overall strategy.
Yeah, but it's all more politics, isn't it? And what we don't want is more politics. What we need to know is whether or not there is a substantial gas reserve in our territorial waters, and if so, is somebody prepared to lift it? Now, before they can even start to explore this and do the seismic surveys, it's going to take a huge amount of their money to do this. And my concern about Rob's motion was that it's going to make the potential investors in this feel very uneasy. That, you know, at every turn, a politician or a group of people in the Isle of Man try to put, sticks in the spokes of the wheel of progress as far as this is concerned. And, you know, I worry that we've got a potentially fantastic resource here, but for whatever reason, people are trying to stop it. Now, I appreciate the reasons. I appreciate that Rob is on the other side of this argument, and people like Daphne are on the other side of this argument to me. Most members are on the other side of the argument to me. But I think that, you know, we've got to find out, is there a sufficient gas reserve there to get it out of the ground? And can we allow the people to get on with it without constant motions and reviews and Keys debates on it and Council of Ministers investigations? You know, if it's there, let's sort it out and have it away.
And Rob, obviously, Stu doesn't represent your opinion. I think that's pretty clear from what I've read in Hansard. But Stu's opinion does reflect the opinion of quite a number of people on the Isle of Man. So how would you respond to what appear to be reasonably legitimate concerns that Stu's expressing here?
Well, firstly, if I could address the timing of this, I put this motion forward so that it was on the register of business for more than 6 weeks. And actually, it predated me putting that motion down, predated any knowledge of the extension of a review for Kroger. So I'm not being a nuisance here. This is something that I thought actually did require review. And I was very careful with the wording, because I could have brought a motion that says, let's not have gas extraction. I didn't do that. This is a Council of Ministers strategy. So it is, in my opinion, the great majority of Tynwald agreed that it should go back to the Council of Ministers for review. I didn't prejudge anything that would be in that review. And actually, there were some very good points made in the debate about some of the additional opportunities for offshore energy that weren't in the original strategy. So we may find that there are additional things added to this strategy when it comes back for debate in later on this year.
I think Stu's strong point here is in relation to the potential income for the Isle of Man that would come from extracting, or could come from extracting, gas. I mean, we would all agree that to move from where we are, well, I would think we would all agree on this, to move from where we are is going to cost a lot of money from where we are to where we need to be in terms of a zero carbon future. So is there not at least the slightest bit of attraction to the argument Stu's putting forward here, that actually to pay for all these expensive things that we're going to have to do, use the resource that we've got?
We know that we cannot stay with the same method of generating energy now. We know that. We also know that we started our transition earlier than most. Our transition to gas started in 2003. And to transition, the idea of gas as a transition fuel is a good argument in 2003. We timed it to perfection. And I think we need to think about how we continue that transition. The world has already moved on with the way that the UK have reduced their CO2 over the last 15 years, 67% reduction, whilst ours has grown. I mean, we covered that in the last time I was in this studio. So really, my contention here is that renewable energies and renewable energy technologies are already on a par or cheaper than generating electricity from gas. So why would we not move to something that provides secure energy cheaper, potentially with a reduction in electricity bills for people on the island?
So, Stu, the party's over here in relation to gas.
Yeah, not quite yet, it isn't. And it is recognised as a transitional fuel, isn't it? And I think the whole of the EU recognises that it's a transitional fuel, and that it's going to have to be used for the next probably 20 or 30 years quite easily. And there are two strands to my argument. One is the financial benefit to the Isle of Man from fuel taxes and duties. But the other is energy security. I mean, we've all seen what's going on at the moment in the Ukraine, and we've all seen the political pressure that Putin's been able to apply to the rest of Europe by effectively holding Europe ransom as far as gas is concerned. The argument that, you know, it's going to do no good at all for our carbon footprint and all the rest of it, I think that that's a nonsense. We're going to still be using gas for a considerable period of time in the Isle of Man. My argument is, let's use our gas. Even if it's no cheaper, at least we buy in local, we shop in local, which we've been told for years is the best way of doing things. And at least we've got that security there.
So Rob, I mean, your tree-hugging approach effectively is allowing Putin to dictate policy across Europe.
Well, I don't buy this argument at all. Something like 2.5% of the gas we consume on the island originates in the USSR, in Russia. So would it have an effect? Yes. But actually, I don't see that as an argument for continuing with gas. I see it as an argument for accelerating the move away from it, because right now our energy security is dependent on other countries. And with a renewables strategy, that is less so. So why would we not choose that more secure path?
The only trouble with renewables, and I'm not against renewables, is that, you know, at the moment what we're talking about are wind farms, which are hideous things. You know, wherever you see them, I went on the boat to see my kids over Christmas, and, you know, you're sailing through these huge fields of wind turbines, which at one point I thought were actually quite attractive, but when there are dozens, hundreds of the things, less so. One of the beauties of this Kroger gas field is that there will be no visible signs of it. It's all going to be underwater. It'll come ashore somewhere near Mackled, I suppose, and feed into the grid, the gas grid. So it's a beautifully clean, environmentally sound way of doing it. Certainly more so than having a huge wind-powered field off the Isle of Man.
You're listening to Rob Mercer MLC and Stu Peters MHK.
Somebody sent me a message, I think, on social media saying that there's a new form of wind turbine which uses clever sort of maglev hubs, which is hugely more effective than the things that we've got at the moment. Great. Apparently one of these things will serve a population of 400,000 or whatever. So great, let's have a small one of those, stick it on the calf of man where nobody's having to look at it all day long, and get that feeding the grid and turn off the gas power. No problem with any of that. But, you know, it seems that it's not that simple. And whatever we want to do, somebody's going to complain about it anyway. But I'm all for clean. Anything that makes the air and the water and all the rest of it cleaner, greener, more sustainable, happy with that. But I don't think we can ignore natural resources that we've got. And if we leave this gas in the ground, at some point it will become completely worthless. At the moment, it has a real value to it, which, back to the original point, will have a significant impact on the Isle of Man's finances for the next couple of decades.
Rob, gas effectively has no impact at all, you know, visual impact on the environment. Is that a fair statement?
I'm not sure I can agree with that, really. You have to think of the externalities of the gas extraction, the production of CO2. That's not paid for. It does have an effect. It might not be immediately visible, but that impact is there. And that's why the world has decided to transition towards, you know, a zero carbon future.
Those who study the impacts of climate change would suggest that the destruction of the natural environment as we know it, which they very clearly, and I say they, we're talking about scientists here, claim is down to the burning of fossil fuels. Surely to goodness, the bigger impact is what's happening to the planet.
Well, and that's fair, and I don't have any problem with that, but everything in life, there is a cost to it. There's no such thing as a free lunch. I was talking to somebody the other day, and this is something that I had never even considered, but it made sense to me, who was saying that it's all very well building these big wind farms everywhere, but they are effectively absorbing the energy of the wind that makes it unnatural. And you're upsetting the climate probably more by doing that than by lifting gas out of the ground. And I'd never thought about that, but we look at equilibrium, don't we? And if you are taking one component out of the climate, then it's going to have knock-on effects elsewhere. Now, I'm not an expert at that, or any of this particularly, but it makes sense to me. I think we've got to consider things like that as well.
It'd be interesting to see the percentage that we're talking about here, Stu. But I'm glad you brought up the concept of equilibrium. Because if you look at how natural gas or fossil gas or fossil fuels are formed, they're formed over millions and millions of years. So the energy that is stored has been stored over a very long period of time. And what we have done is we've taken and extracted that, and we've burned it in under two centuries. And so when we're looking at equilibrium, it's very interesting to contrast how much of a jolt that has made to the Earth systems to take millions of years worth of energy storage and release it that fast.
Well, but that's progress, isn't it? What's the answer to that, that we all go back to riding on horses?
Well, I think that's a pretty tame argument, to be honest. No one is suggesting that anyone goes back to riding a horse, but an efficient use of the energy that lands and is present within the Earth systems without extracting, but by taking energy in a regenerative fashion. The Earth systems are powered by the sun, effectively. The climate, the weather, the energy lands, effectively all of that energy comes from the sun. That's what moves the air masses, that's what spins wind turbines. Solar panels can take the energy directly from the sun. As long as the sun keeps shining, we can rely on those forms of energy. We cannot continue to rely on systems that we know are throwing the rest of Earth's systems out of kilter.
But actually, I mean, you're saying that I'm sure no one is suggesting that we all go back to riding horses, but there are people who would suggest, and certainly sitting on your side of the argument, might suggest that the last 200-300 years of extraction of fossil fuels has allowed the population of the world, the human population of the world, to massively expand well beyond the sustainable means of the planet. I mean, that is a suggestion that is being made. Is that fair?
I don't dispute the fact that the availability of cheap energy over the last several centuries has had that effect. What I'm saying is that we can still have reliable, cheap energy just from non-fossil sources.
And to a certain extent, taking the fossil fuel argument and being a little mischievous about this, if the scientists are right, there's going to be an awful lot more energy in the atmosphere, which is going to be better for driving your wind farms in the future. So the more gas that we're burning is the more unstable the environment becomes, the more energy that's going to be out there to be extracted by wind farms.
It all seems to be so slow, though, to me. I mean, I've made the point before that I'm not against all this alternative energy. I think it's great. If we can do it, super, smashing, lovely. And if we can do it for the right price, and Rob's saying now that, you know, you can generate wind-powered electricity cheaper than you can traditional stuff, which is kind of news to me. But if that's true, and if you've got to look at the whole life cost of something, you've got to look at the commissioning cost, you've got to look at the decommissioning cost and all the rest of it, and whether or not, I mean, I saw something recently that suggests that the blades of these things are often made out of carbon fibre that can't be reprocessed. They've got to bury the things in the ground, which doesn't seem particularly helpful. But I really don't think that the Isle of Man should be early adopters in this. And considering the amount of time that people have been looking to perfect the technology to harness the wind and the waves and all the rest of it, we don't seem to have got very far with it. And what the Isle of Man must never do is to be an early adopter or to virtue signal to other people. And it costs us all a fortune to do it.
Seriously, Stu, do you honestly believe that if a wind farm, you know, if the green light was given for a wind farm tomorrow, I mean, you were talking maybe another 2 or 3 years at least, before it would be built, would that mean that we would be an early adopter?
Well, it's not perfect technology yet, is it? That's the problem.
How early do you want to be, Stu? Because the first commercial wind turbine, I from memory, was installed in 1979. You know, we're surrounded by wind turbines that are generating energy for the UK. That is very well established technology. There's nothing new about it. 20 years ago, maybe, not now.
But it's not terribly efficient, is it, Rob?
The same could be said for the combustion engine. I mean, your great passion, of course, motor cars. I mean, using that analogy, Stu, we wouldn't have moved away from horses and carts until super efficient combustion engines had been developed.
Well, you've
got you.
Well, actually, let's talk about efficiency. You know, What, other than the cost of maintenance and installation, what are the input costs for a wind turbine? There isn't any. The wind blows or it doesn't blow.
And I suppose
when it's blowing, it's generating electricity that you effectively are not having to pay an input cost for.
And what do you do when the wind isn't blowing or if it's blowing too hard? Because we can't store that energy. A genuine question.
I understand. I understand. Well, in the UK, what they're looking at is to use hydrogen as a means of storing excess power, and the use of grid-scale storage technologies, such as batteries, but not exclusively so, to balance the grid during those times. And the other thing, the other part, I suppose, of that, of their own energy security thinking, is the interconnectors between the UK and Europe and other countries. So when the wind isn't blowing here, it's available somewhere else and we can purchase it. With the fossil fuel generation, you have your maintenance, you have your ongoing capital expenditure that has to be paid down, and you also have an input cost. You have to pay for the gas. And that, even if we extracted our own gas, we would still be paying for it. It's not free. There'd still be an input cost. And that's, for me, what I'd like to see as part of this review is actually a proper economic model. Because all we're doing here is really, throwing rocks at each other, saying this is cheaper, that's more expensive. But actually, until we see what does this actually mean, what's the economic model that says this is better than this option, this option better than this option?
To me,
and I'm hoping we'll
that.
See something like that.
It's simpler than that, Rob. Yeah. I'm with you more than I'm against you on these things. But to me, if, as Kroger say, there could be a £5 billion benefit to the Manx economy over a period of years, and we would have gas security for our power station, it would be criminal, as far as I'm concerned, not to use that. We should exploit that for the benefit of everybody on the Isle of Man. And if some resolution was passed to say, well, you're all right, but half of that £5 billion has got to go towards renewable energies for when the gas runs out, I wouldn't have a problem with that at all.
This is precisely my point, I think, is that we hear various numbers have been bandied about. In the original... I think in the original debates where they talked about this, I think it was a £400 million... pound benefit to the economy. Then it was 1 billion, then it was 2 billion, then I think Trevor Cowen mixed up his billion cubic feet with his pounds, with his pound sterling, said it was 800 billion. And that's why I think actually we need to just take a step back from all these numbers flying around and say, look, what is the actual economic benefit? What's the sliding scale actually on these things? How does that work for the Manx economy and for the people who live here?
So what we should be doing is that as politicians, we should be giving comfort to the people who are thinking of investing in Kroger, as far as the exploration is concerned, to get a definitive answer how much gas is in the ground that we could exploit and what would the benefit of that be to the economy.
Well, I was almost about to wind the programme up to say we seem to be starting to coalesce around some middle ground, and anyway, we've now just slightly polarised again. Never a dull moment when we get these two together. The debate on gas extraction and renewables has big implications for all our futures. So do we go for the gas money, or is the risk to our climate and international reputation too great? Expect this debate to heat up in the next few months as we get closer to learning government's new approach. But for now, I'm Phil Gorn. Gurumayu. Thanks for listening.